Okay, so today or tonight, it's a little bit more relaxed, so it's a little bit informal. I actually prefer the two-way communication rather than just me talking. So feel free to raise your hands anytime if you have any question, and interrupt me anytime as well, so it's fine. And I might throw some questions at you. You never know. So the topic that was given today was the Buddhism as a way of life. So the idea is whether Buddhism is a religion or is it a way of life? What is it? What do you think? Who think it's a religion? Who think Buddhism is a religion? Nobody. Ooh. Two? And three? Who thinks it's a way of life? Oh, almost everybody. And I see same hands. Two people voted for both. This is okay. I think it comes down to semantics. It comes down to how you define what religion is and what is way of life. So the common, not common, I actually look it up on dictionary.com. Let's see what dictionary.com says about religion. It's a specific fundamental set of beliefs and practices generally agreed upon by a number of persons or sects. So if we look at this definition, I think Buddhism is a religion. It's a set of beliefs, beliefs in a quotation mark, and practices which are generally agreed upon and passed down generation to generation. So in that sense, Buddhism, it can be a religion. But if you define religion as a belief in a particular creational god or something like that, then Buddhism is not a religion. Because in Buddhism, we don't say there is a one supernatural or superpower being that create the whole world. We don't believe in creational god. So that's Buddhism. But what about philosophy? The definition from dictionary.com: a rational investigation of the truths and principles of being, knowledge, or conduct. So I think it's also Buddhism. So we have, in Buddhism, you don't just believe in blind faith. So basically, whatever the Buddha says, you don't have to believe in it. So all you need to do is you practice and you investigate whether what the Buddha says is true or not, and then you know the value of Buddhism. So in that sense, it is an investigational of truth and principles of being and knowledge and conduct. So in that sense, it can be both religion and also a way of life. But is it so important though that we have to define whether Buddhism is a religion or is it a way of life? I don't think it is, right? No, right? But then why are you guys here? Why are you here? Why don't you go out, hang out with your friends in a pub or somewhere, having dinner? Why are you here? Why do you want to learn about Buddhism? Anyone want to give it a try? Well, except the coordinator or the exos. Maybe you're forced to be here, but other than you guys, why are you here? What makes you want to learn about Buddhism?
Yeah, so to learn how can we incorporate the principles into our daily lives.
Right, so you are in
practical
aspect of
yeah.
Buddhism, yes? Anyone else? Sorry, let me continue. Why are you interested in Buddhism then? Why are you interested in learning about that?
Because in daily lives, we encounter a lot of stresses and also sometimes a lot of distractions. And it's quite difficult to have a sometimes peaceful
So you're missing the peaceful aspect in your daily life, basically.
Yeah.
You miss that peace. Okay, anyone else? Anyone else? Why are you here? You got nothing else to do at home? Boring TV shows? Or you no longer subscribe to Netflix? Why are you here? Oh, you basically have no idea what Buddhism is all about, therefore, are you? Yeah?
Because this car is like just for doing the uni life and like too much assignment work or something like that, and like attending some course like Buddhism is quite like refreshing your mind, and yeah, it's the same as mentioned before her, yet it's quite feel peaceful and yeah, and calming down your like the very nervous and stressing feelings. Yeah.
That's good. That's good, very good. So I think the common thread that I can see here is that you want to learn how to overcome with your own challenges and your stress and whatever worry that you have in life and to become more peaceful. Well, you're in the right place. Buddhism can help you with that. But if I can summarize, why we practice Buddhism is because we want to be free. But free off or free from what? Is it free off? Or is it free to? Or is it free off from? What do you think? Free of something? Free to do something? Or free from something? All of them. Free to do everything. Oh, maybe not so correct. It's actually free from suffering. So we want to be free from suffering. But then, why? And how? That's why the Buddha is very a good teacher. In a way, we are very lucky that the Buddha has laid out all this path for us to help us understand this. And the Buddha, first teaching of the Buddha, when he gained enlightened, and then he realized what he saw, and he gave the first sermon. And the first sermon that he gave was on the Four Noble Truths. I'm sure that most of you have heard of Four Noble Truths before. Who hasn't heard of Four Noble Truths? Everybody? Or you haven't too? Okay, I'll just give you a rundown about Four Noble Truths. So, after the Buddha's enlightenment, the story goes that he basically found that it's so profound that there are not many people who understand what he's going to teach. So he got the resistance within not to teach the Dharma or the teachings of the Buddha. But luckily there is a Deva, what's his name? A Brahma or Deva, a heavenly realm, talked to him and said, "The Buddha, there are some people in this life with a little dust in their eyes that can understand your teaching. So please, for the benefit of those people, please teach." That's why the Buddha then decided to teach, because he realized that yes, of course it's going to be a profound teaching, not everybody will understand, but there will be a small proportion of people who can see what he's trying to teach. So he decided to teach. So the first teaching that he taught was on Four Noble Truths. And this Four Noble Truths is basically the core of fundamental teaching of Buddhism. In all traditions of Buddhism, you'll always find the Four Noble Truths because it's such a fundamental teaching in Buddhism. So what are the four? The first truth is the truth of suffering. The ancient language spoken by the Buddha is called Pali. So obviously the teaching was also given in Pali. So the word of suffering in Pali was dukkha. Commentary says that it's really hard to define or translate the word dukkha because there is no specific word that can easily explain the essence of the word dukkha. So the most common translation is suffering. But yet, suffering alone is not enough. So the dukkha essentially means unsatisfactoriness. So in life, there's truth of unsatisfactoriness. Why there is unsatisfactoriness in life? Because life, everything in life is impermanent. So if you like something, it doesn't last forever. If you're happy, your happiness doesn't last forever. So everything in life has beginning and has its end. And also because it's so impermanent, there is no essentially permanent self in life, there is no permanent self in this one self, and that's why it's suffering. But the way the Buddha also says about life is dukkha or life is suffering is true, to say that birth, age, sickness, aging and death is suffering. So basically all these four aspects is suffering because it's all evolving from birth, birth conditions death, and while you're living, you'll encounter sickness, you'll grow older, or you grow, older, all right? You become old, that's what I'm trying to say. And the second noble truth is the cause of suffering. So this is the crucial part, because if you know, yes, we know Buddha, life is suffering, but what's next? So that's why the cause in itself is very important. And luckily the Buddha found out the cause, because without knowing the cause, how do you overcome it? So when you want to solve a problem, if you don't know the root of the problem, how you solve this problem? It's impossible, isn't it? So similarly with this, luckily the Buddha knows what the cause of our suffering. So in summary, the Buddha said the cause of suffering is craving or tanha. Tanha, literal translation, is thirst. So the quality of thirst, you know, it's insatiable. So tanha is something that is insatiable. The craving, insatiable craving, is the cause of suffering. And then there is an end, that is the third truth. So if you have the fact that it is suffering and then you know the cause, obviously there is an end to it. Happy days, there's an end. And the end is the end of suffering. So in other words, it's Nibbana or enlightenment. And then, but knowing all these three is not enough, is it? How do you get to the end? Is the fourth of the truth, the path that leads you to the end of suffering. And the path is the Noble Eightfold Path. So there are eight, easy to remember. So I hope you all remember what these eight are. Only eight? Come on. who can say the first one?
Right understanding.
Yes, right view or right understanding. Not yet.
Thinking.
Huh? Right thinking or right intention? Right speech?
Right action.
Yes, right action.
Right livelihood.
The right livelihood.
Right concentration.
Not yet. Not yet. So mindfulness, concentration, and what's the sixth?
Perception.
No? Like effort, correct. So can somebody repeat the sequence? I just want to test whether you're listening. What is it?
Right understanding,
right view, right intention,
right speech,
yes. Action, no, likelihood, effort, mindfulness, concentration. So when in practice, you don't need to practice them in sequence. But once you understand this fully, it all comes down in sequence. So that's the beauty of this noble path. Yet, when you practice one, you cannot practice the other parts. It's like a wheel. So like, you know, the common diagram of Eightfold Path is actually a round wheel with eight spokes. There's a reason behind it, because if you want to turn the wheel, all the spokes will touch the ground, will it? Right? Similarly, when you practice one aspect, you're actually practicing the other aspects as well. So you can't practice one in isolation in a way. Well, you can, but all other aspects will have some influences into that. And when it comes to full, complete practice, it actually goes in sequence. It all starts from right view, and down to right mindfulness, and comes back to right view again. So you never really have like a pen or like a linear thing that has one to end, but rather it's a continuous thing. That's why it is depicted like a wheel. So yeah, that's it. That's easy. Is it? Is it easy to practice? Who said it's easy to practice? Who practiced first? Who really put the normal apple path in their life? Come on, be honest. You do? Very good. How do you put in practice in your life?
I just watch, I observe my thinking,
yes,
my speech and my body.
Yes. And then? Just watch.
Try not to do wrongly.
Okay, so you try to do good all the time. Okay. What about the moral, the right action part? So you try to speak truthfully,
yes.
Not telling lies.
Yes, not hurting people.
Not hurting people.
Well, I'm striving, that's my goal.
That's right. That's good that you emphasize on trying. So all this, what we do is actually practice. When we say Buddhism, we are actually practicing the Buddha's teaching. When we become a Buddhist, we are actually practicing it. When we say practice, it means that the more we do, the better we become. And along the way, we'll make mistakes. So along the way, you will make mistakes. So before you become complete or perfect in all these aspects, you'll make mistakes along the way. And you learn from the mistakes. And it's okay. It's okay. Like, I make mistakes all the time anyway. So yeah, we are all human beings. So don't get too hard on yourself if you feel like you're not up to the standard yet. Because we're still practicing. But having said that, when you practice, you have to be sincere. Because if you are not sincere in your practice, you won't see the outcome to it. You won't see growth. You won't see yourself becoming more happy, more peaceful, less angry, less anxious, less worry, and all those sort of things. You won't get the benefit if you don't practice it sincerely, right? Any question about the Noble Eightfold Path? Easy? Understand everything? Do you want me to go through individual aspect, or you're happy with me leaving it with all of them? No? Who understands in theory? I don't expect you to understand it in full context about the Noble Eightfold Path. In theory, everybody knows? Don't be shy. This is your task. Yeah? Happy to pass it on? No need to explain anything? Easy. We can leave early, which is good. All right. Another way to look at the Noble Eightfold Path is it's actually a three-aspect training. So you train yourself in morality, or generosity and morality, and then you train yourself in meditation and in wisdom. So morality, another way also to practice the five precepts. Have you heard of the five precepts? Who hasn't heard of the five precepts? Okay. The five precepts are basically training, training ground. Is not really commandment, meaning that it's not a must that you have to follow, but you should train yourself not to do all these five. What are these? Refrain from killing. So you're refraining yourself from killing any living beings. That includes ants, insects, cockroaches. So you refrain yourself from killing those, and including human beings as well. I hope you haven't killed anyone. I'm just joking. And the second one is to refrain yourself from taking what is not given. So it is essentially not to take anything that doesn't belong to you. Intentionally. So the third one is refrain from sexual misconduct. I think I'm in the right order, am I?
Yeah,
sexual misconduct. So sexual misconduct meaning that you're not doing things that is harmful sexually. That could mean that, like let's say somebody already married, you are be with this person, for example, or like you're an adult, yet you're having a sexual relationship with such a young age person, like a child. That is sexual misconduct. And then the fourth precept is not telling lies. Refrain yourself from telling lies. That includes white lies. So any untruthful words, they are actually lies. So just refrain yourself from that. And the last one is refraining yourself from taking intoxicants. Intoxicants are drugs or alcohol because they can cloud your mind. And some people argue, some people argue to say that, look, I only sip one glass or one shot. It won't affect me. I'm not drunk, blah, blah, blah. But yet, let me ask you this question. Have you had any alcohol in the last hour or two? Are you fully awake and mindful at the moment? Exactly. So without the influence of alcohol, you're not fully mindful, yet you still want to have alcohol? That because what we are doing here is that we try to be awake and to be mindful as much as we can. So all these substances like alcohol, drugs, they're clouding your mind. So you basically are going away from your practice if you do that. And the danger to it is also, if you break the fifth precept, you probably or might break either one of the other four or even all of them. So that's the danger of the fifth precept. A lot of people overlook the fifth precept because they think that I'm just going to have one or two glasses, it won't affect me. But look at the incidents on the road. People think that they're still okay to drive, but then when they drive under the influence of alcohol, what happened? So sometimes we don't judge ourselves well enough to know. That's my point also. You might think that there is no influence of that substance in your body, but you never know. Your judgment could be clouded. So better abstain from it if you can, but if you can't, then it's up to you. That is the five precepts. And these are the easy ones that we can do in our daily life. This is actually the basic, but don't overlook the basic. When you do businesses or when you study business course 101, what they always say is sometimes back to basic, back to basic. You know why? Because if your basic is not right, your foundation is not right, no matter how tall you build something, it will collapse in the end. So the basic, yet it is basic, but it is so important. And if you can perfect your five precepts, nobody else will benefit it but yourself. Of course, the people around you will benefit it because you're giving them a precious gift of they're feeling safe with you because they know that you're not going to kill them. Whew, thankfully. you're not going to take their belongings. That's a great gift. You know, in some countries, you might be very worried about your belongings because you don't know if a burglar will come in and break into your house and steal your stuff. If you know that peacefully, not peacefully, when you know that your environment wouldn't even bother taking your pen, a little thing like that, you feel peaceful. You feel less worried. And that's a gift that you can give to people. Have you been to Japan? I'm digressing a little bit. Japan, I feel like the culture or the people in Japan uphold this precept really well. They never have the intention, or they don't even have the inkling to take what is not given to them. Like I've seen a situation where this lady, a cashier lady, ran after a customer because this customer forgotten about their change. To that extent. And then a friend of mine also said, because he observed the culture in Japan when he was there, and he observed how people don't even touch other people's belonging in public. So what he did was he did an experiment. So he dropped his wallet in the park or his money in the random places and just watch from afar and see whether anyone's going to ever touch that. And nobody did. And that is wonderful. Like in this life, where else can you find such a peaceful environment? Like I feel like, wow, that is like heaven to me. It's like if it's in Australia, maybe you got 50-50 chance, but that is amazing. So are we digressing? But anyway, back to topic. So that is refraining from taking what's not given to you, and sexual misconduct. Maybe not everybody will be in this situation, but if you are, then think about the harm that you're going to cause, not just yourself, but also other people. Because you probably have seen so many dramas on this, so you know how hurtful and harmful having an affair with another person is. Yes, it's hard to control when you have the desire and whatnot, but that's why the framework helps. If you have these five precepts as your framework, it helps you to help yourself from danger. Because why is it helping yourself from danger? Because when you break any of this, it has consequences. It's not without consequences, right? So whatever you do, you have to reap the result. So if you, let's say you commit sexual misconduct, when you are caught up, when somebody caught you doing that, and the harm that you're going to cause because of this action, you will feel it. It will affect you to some degree. So if you avoid doing this, you avoid all the drama in your life. So in a way, it's a self-protection. So what is the fourth? The fourth is?
Lying.
No lying? So what is no lying? You're telling the truth?
No.
Huh? No?
No.
You're not telling the truth?
because sometimes people tell us white lies.
Yeah. Why do you think white lies is important? Why is it good?
Because sometimes telling the truth at the wrong moment is hurtful.
You reckon? Give me an example.
Like someone is going to die, like, and then you tell like your his or her son or the daughter is like having like suffering from something and is like hurtful to someone going to die, and maybe he from that he could die quicker.